know, don't have any regrets. I mean, if we get this opportunity again, go out and, you know, show your qualities. And yes, we lost the game 4-0, and that's sore. But there's a lot of good things to come out of the game from where we are in our preparation. It's been a long 2 weeks, but it's been a good 2 weeks, quality. And I think the club have done brilliantly, you know, under the circumstances to get us the quality of games that we've had. And yeah, we're looking forward. Look, it'll be interesting playing at Celtic Park for the first time in a long time behind closed doors. So that's going to be another useful exercise for us.
Welcome back to the Grand Old Podcast. We are reconvening for episode number 75 with just over a week to go until the start of season 2020-2021. That's a bit of a mouthful, but I am Hamish Carton, and the road to 10 starts here with John McGinley. Just the two of us, John, but as the wonderful song goes, we can make it if we try.
We can make it. Season 2021, it sounds a bit like the future, doesn't it? I don't know if I ever considered being in this decade when I was younger. I always thought, when I used to think of the future, I used to always think of, what age will it be when Scotland play in the World Cup?
And 120 or something.
Yeah, they've not actually played in the World Cup since 1998, so that's put my ambitions on hold. I would have seen the world, Hamish, if they'd managed.
Yeah, I'm just already reeling from the error of trying to say season 2020-2021, and I think that's the last time I'll be doing that this season, because it is a fair mouthful. But as we say, just what, 8 days to go until Celtic kick off their league season home to Hamilton. Obviously, could be less depending when you're listening to this. That's the way podcasts work, but at the time of recording, we're just over a week away. So on today's show, we're going to have a little bit of a look back, just briefly, at the French tour, some of our takeaways from that, three games we played over there against Nice, Lyon and Paris Saint-Germain. Good opposition in the main. We're then going to focus our attention onto the transfer window, talk about some of the players who could be coming in, one of the players who has come in, and maybe even a couple of the players who have departed the club as well. A couple of other things to throw in, and then we'll finish with a nice wee brief preview ahead of the aforementioned Hamilton game. So obviously, first of all, we've kind of not spoken or done a podcast, I think, since May. Probably it's probably been a couple of months.
Yeah.
How have you been getting on in that period, John? And how are you finding, you know, the relaxation in measures imposed by the government during the height of the coronavirus pandemic?
Well, it does feel like things are getting slightly back to some sort of normality. And I think the last time we spoke, everything was obviously still so up in the air, and we were really at the peak of things when we last spoke. And we weren't even sure about what was going to be happening with football. I would suggest that things have maybe progressed with football quicker than I anticipated. I don't think, you know, there was a part of me that worried about the season starting in August at the time. Although it's behind closed doors, I think the fact that it's going ahead shows the positive progress that's been made in Scotland. And I think that the authorities, you know, negotiating with the Scottish Government to find a common sense way forward is working out well. You know, we're not going to be quarantined after European matches, for example, and all that sort of nonsense. So although public health is still the priority for everyone, I think everyone's excited about the football coming back. And I think that, you know, it's just been such a crazy time that to think that we've gone, you know, over four months without seeing Celtic play a competitive match is something unprecedented and crazy. And I'm just excited to see what the team have to offer. And I'm excited that, you know, things are kind of progressing towards crowds potentially being back into Celtic Park by the end of the year.
Yeah, when you touch on the fact that effectively Celtic's last competitive match was, I think, mid-March, and obviously by the time that we face Hamilton next week, it will be over 4 months, which is, you know, a third of a year, a crazy amount of time to go without Celtic when you consider that usually the longest break between our Scottish Cup final and our first European qualifier is, what, 6 weeks or something?
Yeah.
So it's totally drastic, and there'll be very few Celtic fans alive that have ever gone without Celtic for such a long period, obviously, other than the wars or whatever. But even then, this has been totally different to that. And yeah, it feels kind of nice that competitive Celtic action is on the horizon very much, and we are just a week away, because it doesn't seem so long ago than the height of coronavirus, and with everything to come, that we felt that everything was you know, so far away, and it almost felt as if we wouldn't see Celtic until, I think, predictions maybe from people around us were September, October, even November, stuff like that. Yeah. So we do seem to be slightly ahead of schedule in that regard. But obviously the big thing that everyone's focused on now is getting fans back to games. A couple of the games we played in France, in fact, all three had some sort of degree of supporters allowed in. And it seems like the Scottish government's taken a little bit of a slower approach than certainly down south, and maybe some of the European countries as well. Mm-hmm. What's your feeling at the moment on how this is going to go with getting fans into Celtic Park? Do you think it's going to be a case of these trial or test matches that Celtic are proposing, and is it just going to be building up gradually, maybe 3,000, then 5,000, then 10 and so on, or are we still going to be playing closed door games until maybe 2021?
No, I mean, Celtic have been quite vocal about the fact that they were wanting to do test matches ahead of the new season. That didn't end up being possible. And the Scottish Government are taking a cautious approach, and to be fair, that seemed to be what's working so far, and they're thinking if they kind of put in a little bit of more hard yards now, then it could effectively eliminate things, you know.
Do you think they've been too cautious?
No, I don't think so. I'm not one of those. I think that, you know, they're doing the best they can, and their advice is that if they can be quite or perceived as overly cautious now, it could pay off in the long run, in the sense that Scotland's a small country, and if we have the contact tracing in place, we can effectively eliminate things. Yeah. And then that leads to bigger crowds in quicker fashion. It's frustrating, I think, for perhaps Celtic and for the rest of Scottish football. But I think there's a hope that crowds, or at least some sort of crowds, will be back in stadiums in October, because the SFA were very public about the fact that they weren't going to go ahead with the semi-finals of last season's Scottish Cup tournament unless they could have crowds in place, and they've actually scheduled those matches for October. So there must be some sort of hope from the Joint Response Group, the SFA SPFL group, that crowds are going to be back in some form by the end of October, I would suggest. So I'm hoping that everything is working towards that.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago I caught up with the supporters liaison officer at the Danish side, Brøndby, for quite an interesting chat, actually, about they effectively were used as a test game in Denmark, and it was actually their biggest match, and probably the biggest match in the whole country, against Copenhagen. And they effectively, I think their stadium, Brøndby Stadium, holds about 28,000-30,000, and they were allowed, I think, 3,000 or 3,500 into the stadium for that. Right. And there's some really cool images, if you search online, of Brøndby fans socially distancing, and I effectively just caught up with him for a bit of a chat about, you know, what he had to implement as a supporters liaison officer, and what the perception was from the government and the fans who were at the games, and what the next steps. And it seems, I mean, Denmark, I don't think, had as many cases as us, but similar sized country, I think around about 5 million, if not more. And they're effectively now going to be getting fans back. They think at the start of their new season, which I think starts in maybe 2 or 3 weeks, they're going to be getting fans back in pretty much a full capacity.
Right.
So that was quite interesting. If anyone's not heard that, I'll give a shameless plug for the Bus Boss Scottish Football Podcast, where you can find, I think it's 2 or 3 down, with a chat with Johan Reiler, his name is. But that gave me cause for optimism. But I think, as we've found with everything in coronavirus, no case and no country is the same, and it'll just depend how the Scottish government want to take it. But it's good to see Celtic you know, leading the way, as we often seem to do. Right, French tour. So we played Lyon, as I say. Well, we started with Nice. That was a 1-1 draw. Mm-hmm. We then lost 2-1 to Lyon, although I'm kind of claiming a 1-0 victory in the last 30 minutes when we sent on the real boys. And obviously that 4-0 defeat to PSG as well back on Tuesday. What have we learned from those three matches, and what have you thought from the overall kind of spectacle of all three?
Difficult trip, I think, from a playing perspective. Those kind of mid-tier to upper-tier French teams, I think, are very much at the level Celtic are at currently, I would suggest. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw that against Rennes last year, and I know we kind of ended up doing well against them, but, you know, the likes of Nice and even Lyon, I think, that's the kind of level I think we could be competing at in Europe. And, you know, you think of Lyon, they're a very good side. They're a, you know, they're in the knockout stages of the Champions League in August against Juventus, mm-hmm. and they'll be hoping of progressing to the quarterfinals. So they're a top European side, and for our reserve team to, you know, obviously we had that, it was almost like a European away game. You know, we had that first 15 minutes that were just a disaster, and we just seemed to lose our cool, and then kind of got into the game a bit more then. And I think that it was positive for, in that sense, it was a second string, and then when our field team did come on, we did compete a lot better. And in terms of learning anything, I think the only thing I really learned, and I never put too much stock into these performances, is that we definitely know what Lennon feels is his first 11, but we probably knew that before we went to France. But the fact that Greg Taylor's obviously an outright choice ahead of Bolly Bolingoli, the fact that Frimpong's ahead of El Hamed, I think those are probably the two most contentious positions.
Maybe the even right the fact that, you know, Christie played instead of Incham, because the second half of the season, Incham was certainly the man.
Yeah, and, you know, there's an argument to say that Incham should be playing instead of Scott Brown, and, you know, I'm actually subscribing to that more and more as the months go on. I'm a big fan of Scott Brown, obviously, but I think Incham should be in that team. And I think that whether it's at the expense of Christie or at the expense of Brown, I'd like to see him play more, because I think he's really, really a really, really good player who can, you know, play for us at the highest level in Europe.
See, when we're playing, I mean, Hamilton home's probably a bad example because it's the first day of the season and all that, and it's quite a big game. But see, if you're playing Hamilton at home in the middle of October or the middle of February, do you need Scott Brown in that team?
No, I don't think so, and I would like to see Champ play. That's what I'm saying, yeah. I don't think we do. And it's actually frustrating sometimes that there's such a reliance on, especially in the midfield positions, that there's such a reliance on Brown and McGregor, who play almost every single match, apart from the odd League Cup match. I think there's far more scope to kind of rotate in and out, and we'll see what comes of Ismail Asoro. You know, he had a kind of up and down. I thought he looked tidy in parts and sloppy in other positions. He seems to fancy himself as something of a midfield disruptor, but, you know, it's difficult. But I would play Chan more. Would you play him instead of Brown more often?
Yeah, it's a good point you make. What age is Brown? He's getting on, isn't he? Mm. And I really don't feel that Scott Brown has to play every single match. I think sometimes when we need more creativity in the midfield, I think McGregor can do the running, and I think someone like Incham can do the creativity. Obviously, McGregor has real creativity as well, but I don't think you need Scott Brown to play every single match. I don't think you need Callum McGregor to play every match either, but I know you mentioned Sorrow there. I'm not massively convinced by the strength and depth we've got in midfield. I think Nia Beaton's now seen as more of a defensive option. I think that
I would
much
suggest
is
that, yeah.
clear. Who else have you got? You've got Scott Robertson, Luke O'Connell. These are players. And I quite like Robertson, by the way, so maybe he could get the odd run out this season. But I don't think those are two players who you can really hang your hat on yet as being players who can step in, even in games against lower opposition at Celtic Park. But I agree, even if it was Incham stepping in for Brown the odd week and stepping in for McGregor the other week, I think that's a good way to go, because you've got three really good midfielders there. And there seems to be this argument that Incham is just going to be a really good Celtic player, but he's just not good enough to start. And I don't see why it has to be that argument. I think we play so many games in a season, and this season we're probably going to play even more than any other season, that Incham, I think, should be given the odd run out. But I'd like to see us sign another centre midfielder, but it's probably a little bit down the list, if I'm honest,
just
because there's so many.
Just in terms of selection, you know, another thing that kind of piqued my interest a little bit was the fact that Scott Brain started all three matches. You know, Conor Hazard never even got a start against Lyon, you know, in the much rotated side, which tells me that, you know, Lennon perhaps doesn't see Hazard or Doohan having the ability to kind of step up and play for the first team. Now, the chat is that Doohan's away to go out on loan again, but you'd think that Conor Hazard might have started one of those matches if Lennon felt that one of them was ready to step up and kind of be that either third choice goalkeeper or even the second choice at the moment with the situation as it's panned out. But that was interesting for me. So, you know, that it's just even more of a priority, the goalkeeping position, I think, coming away from France and compared to heading to France.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that. And I think everyone that saw that we made not 11 changes, but 10 changes for the Lyon match, that really stood out to me. And I think that's it in a nutshell. It's almost like Anthony Ralston last season when Lennon wouldn't even start him when we had no other right-backs at the club against, I think it was Sarajevo in the first qualifier. It clearly proved that he didn't fancy or think that Ralston was ready. And I think the same goes for Hazard and Doohan as well. So we need a keeper. And that's not just a backup keeper. I think Scott Bain's that guy. We need a first-choice keeper because I'm just not convinced in Scott Bain. I don't want to massively single anyone out for bad performances because I realise it's the start of the season. And even more so than normal pre-season, these guys haven't played in 4 months. They're going to be, you know, three or four times as rusty as they were before. But I just thought that the mistake he made in letting in that Herrera goal in the PSG game just speaks volumes for what we can't have happen this season. We can't afford to throw away points at any stage of the season, and we need a better goalkeeper than Scott Bain. I think he's a perfectly good number two, but we need a better goalkeeper than him. But we'll come on to that in a wee second. My own thoughts on the games, as you say. Nice, I thought we started really well. Mm. I wasn't massively impressed with them. And I think they finished fifth in the end in the French top flight. But I wasn't massively impressed with them. Lyon, as we say, was a tale of, you know, 60 minutes and then 30 minutes. I thought the first team looked really hungry when they came on. PSG, now, I gave my thoughts by video. And again, another shameless plug for 67 Hail Hail YouTube channel. Yeah, exactly. For anyone who doesn't know, we're both employed by the company who helps with this website / YouTube channel. So if you want to read John's views, 67hailhail.com. And if you want to see me in action and work out what I actually look like, and it's a wonderful site, may I add, we're on 67hailhail on YouTube. But anyway, I was giving my thoughts after the PSG game, and some of the comments maybe thought, and rightly, in my opinion, that I was a little bit harsh. And I spoke, you know, that way you speak right after the game and the emotions are still flowing. And it may only have been a pre-season game, but I just really, really struggled to see us being pumped. And I know it was only 4-0. It wasn't 7-0 or it wasn't 5-0 at Celtic Park. But I still just struggled to see us outclassed like that. And I know PSG have an amazing squad and all that. But I struggled to see his pump, so I really didn't enjoy that game at all. And in hindsight, yeah, some of the comments are probably correct. I probably was a little bit harsh about some of the things. I think I compared it to a Brendan Rodgers performance in Paris, and that was probably a little bit over the top. But it's just because Celtic matter to me, Jordan. I was just hurting a little bit, even though it was a friendly. But yeah, I don't enjoy watching us play, even friendlies against top class, because they just tear us apart. And incidentally, I saw PSG last night in the French Cup final against Saint Etienne. They won that 1-0. So only one goal, but it was a really, really exciting game. There was a brawl featuring 22 players effectively in the first half.
That nearly happened in our match as well.
You see the common theme there, it's PSG. But the Saint Etienne defender in the final ever match of his career, Zinedine Zidane style, gets sent off for chopping down Kylian Mbappe. And there was a brawl that ensued after that, and Mbappe seems like he's in a bit of trouble terms of getting fit for the Champions League now. He kind of appeared in crutches in the second half. So it's just a shame it wasn't the other one. That's all I could say, the other winger.
The full of belters. Lennon and Neymar is funny. I don't like us playing those teams either, but I just brush it off. I was just like, this is a nothing match.
You're clearly more mature and more well-versed in Celtic pre-season games.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly do not put much stock in pre-season at all, other than fitness and, you know, getting some indication of what the manager's thinking about his team, because they do like to test things out. But in terms of performances, I never go too overboard, and I never go too negative on it. But you know, Patrick Comala scoring his first goal was a little bit notable. The way he chased in the keeper and slotted that home, that was good with the backdrop of what's going on with Lee Griffiths. So if we can get him up to speed, I'm not sure he's capable of playing as a solo striker. But we'll need to see. And Lennon kind of tempered expectations on Comala, although he's been talked up by you know, the Celtic media team have been putting a pretty heavy glare on both Patrick Comala and Ismael Osoro after they arrived in January and didn't make much impact, through no fault of their own really, but this summer the media team at Celtic have really been highlighting them in all these Instagram videos and interviews with the website and the Celtic View. And so there was a bit of hype about Comala and Solo heading to France, and Comala immediately, you know, followed that up with a goal against Nice. So fair play to him. And after the match, Lennon kind of said that he needs to change the way he plays to suit Celtic rather than Celtic change to suit Comala. So he's still a work in progress. So I'm not sure, you know, anyone expecting him to hit the ground running should perhaps be a little bit more patient with that. And we do need Griffiths back or another striker in, but I was happy that he got his goal.
Yeah. Who else has looked good from those limited minutes we've seen so far?
I would like to see a little bit more of Karamoko Dembele this season. He wasn't amazing in the minutes that he had out there, but I think that he's at least shown that he could perhaps get more appearances under his belt in a competitive setting. He's only come off the bench. He's never started a competitive game for us, so I would quite like to see him more, especially with Mikey Johnston injured again. You know, we might need that kind of depth there. We're actually, the wing areas aren't looking great in terms of depth, so I think Dembele might see more action over the coming weeks and months. But aside from that, I can't really pick anyone out for exceptional performances.
Yeah, I think there's been bits and bobs from certain players. I thought Ryan Christie, probably other than the final game against PSG when he seemed to get a little bit wound up by Neymar. In fact, there was a point when Neymar was holding him off, and then you could hear Neil Lennon shouting, "Follow the ball, don't get wound up," and Christie's head just completely went. But other than that, I thought he started the season quite well. Greg Taylor, you touched on it. I'd like to think we've all come at the conclusion now that he's better than ball and goalie.
Yeah.
But does that mean that he's good enough to be a Celtic left back? I think those are two very different questions. I think Taylor defends well, but his big problem with me is what he can add in an attacking sense. And obviously at Celtic, being a full back, there's probably more emphasis placed on what you can do going forward than what you do defensively. So yeah, that's my big question over Greg Taylor. Edouard, obviously, as well, giving him the first mention of the season on the podcast. It doesn't look like he's been away at all, just some of his touches. He's been relatively quiet, but he certainly doesn't look rusty at all, and I'm just really hoping he can hit the ground running as well, because it goes without saying, but he's going to be a key man this season. Right, transfer window-wise, goalkeeper's obviously the big issue at the moment. You are more in the kind of writing side of things than me at the moment, in the know with all the things that are happening at Celtic. What's the current state of play with where we are in terms of finding a goalkeeper? Is the Forster deal dead, off the table?
Well, Lennon's not actually officially closed the door on it. I think there's, you know, from the very public comments, and Lennon's been very candid this summer actually about a variety of issues, but from the very public comments, it seems that there's a real frustration on Celtic's side that they felt that something had been agreed with Forster, that he would return for the season on loan on an option to buy thing, and having agreed a fee with Southampton for that, or agreed a deal, a loan deal, a loan to buy deal, the player himself or his representatives or whoever decided to pull the plug on it, really. And so Celtic have been left searching for a replacement, and it's difficult. It's a difficult situation because the English thing's kind of delayed because they obviously finished their season or are finishing their season. And then, you know, they won't be in transfer mode for another couple of weeks, I would suggest, because I would assume there might be some sort of, you know, kind of recalibration between seasons as they kind of consider what their priorities are. And so it's difficult for Celtic because we do kind of revolve ourselves around what goes on in the top two English divisions sometimes, especially since Lennon and Hammond have come into the club. And so we don't want to move too quickly because there's a feeling that we might be able to pick up players from that division as things move towards October now. The transfer window's not closing until October, and in case you've missed that. And so in terms of the goalkeeper search, it leaves us waiting on Forster, but also needing to bring a goalkeeper in quite quickly. So there's been a number of players linked. There's been Joe Hart, there's been David Marshall, and Vaclav Hladký, who was at St Mirren for the last two seasons, and also a Greek keeper, AEK Athens goalkeeper Vasily Barkas, who actually played against us in those 2018 qualifiers when they knocked Brendan Rodgers' team out.
He seemed to have made a pretty big impression as well, going again from the video I posted just after it became clear Forster wasn't coming to the club, and I went through a list of players that we could be linked with, and I think three or four of the comments named this guy before there'd been any talk of any interest from Celtic.
Well, he has a good profile, and when I say that, I mean that he's 26 years old, but he's already made over 100 appearances for AEK, so he's been playing from quite a young age for them, and he's broken through into the Greek national team. He's already won 10 caps with them, so he's on his way to becoming, you know, installed as the first choice there. I think he's been in and out of the team actually over the last 6 months. I'm not sure what that was to do with, whether it was injury issues or it was just the Greek national team were just testing out another keeper, but he's got 10 caps there, and he's also got Champions League experience, and he's also won a National League title with AEK, so those tick all the boxes for me when Celtic are looking for players from the continent. And I think that bringing him in for a multi-million pound deal would provide fans with some confidence that we've found someone that the club are willing to commit to as a number one. And that's part of the battle. I think perception's a big thing when you're a goalkeeper. Confidence is a big thing when you're a goalkeeper. So I think bringing him in would be a positive thing for me. At the moment, it seems like we're perhaps a bit away in terms of negotiations with AEK. The reports on this have been coming from the Greek side, so it's difficult to kind of you what to translate it. But you know, I did run a latest report past the Greek speaker to kind of sense check it, and the chat seems to be that not at the end of this week, but the end of last week, we offered £3.5 million for him, and AEK rejected that. And Celtic returned to negotiations on Tuesday. And at the moment, I don't think any of the sources, either this side of things or the Greek side of things, really know what's going on with it at the moment. They just know that the clubs are in negotiations and that the player is perhaps willing to come, and we've maybe offered them, you know, slightly upwards of £10,000 a week. And I think AEK are holding out for a bit more money. But the chat from the Greek side is that if they get offered five and a half million plus a 5 or 10% sell on clause, then they would sell the keeper now, and that he would move for the wages offered between £10,000 and £12,000 a week. That seems to be where it's at the moment, and we'll see how quickly that progresses next week. You know, the Greek side are saying that Nick Hammond's interested in the player most of all within Celtic, and that Hammond wants to get him now because he foresees a situation where his market value increases over the next couple of months. So that's where it is now. It seems we've committed to the idea of pursuing Barkas at the moment, instead of going for these free agent options or, you know, the free transfer, because with Joe Hart or David Marshall from Wigan, who are in administration, etc. So that seems to be where it's at the moment.
And that's got to be positive, as you say, and it will be seen as being quite positive from the wider Celtic support if the club do go out and spend money on a goalkeeper. And I think that the recent history tells you that we've got a pretty good record of signing goalkeepers, certainly first choice goalkeepers. When you think back to Craig Gordon and Forster, even back to Artur Boric before him, the club, whoever it is, I don't know, I think Stevie Woods will play a role in bringing a goalkeeper into the club as well. And he clearly knows what he's looking for, and then once the player arrives, we all know the work that Stevie Woods can do. He seems to be a bit of a miracle worker at Lennox Town. So I'm quite confident about this. I've certainly, if there was one position that I trusted the club to sign a player, it would be in nets, given our last, you know, recent history over the last 10, 15 years. So I don't remember him too much from the Athens tie. I've kind of consigned that to the history books. I just remember us having loads and loads of possession in the home game. I think they'd been reduced to 10 men, but I can't remember him being any good or any bad or whatever. But anyway, some of the Celtic fans seem to quite like him, so we'll take their word for it, and hopefully the deal can be put through in the coming days and weeks, because we certainly need a goalkeeper in place. Not for the Hamilton game, probably, or maybe even the ones after that in the league, but certainly by the time Champions League qualifiers come round, then we could do with another number one in place. Right, elsewhere, striker. We touched on this earlier briefly with regards to Klamala, and also the fact that Lee Griffiths, the situation there. Obviously, we won't go massively into it, because I think most people listening to this will know what's happened, the fact that Lee Griffiths effectively returned following the coronavirus break, looking not too healthy, let's just say, in terms of his fitness and maybe even his weight. Was that mentioned?
Lennon said he didn't return to ideal playing weight, so take that how it is.
Right, okay. So certainly seems like Lee Griffiths isn't in the greatest place. Neil Lennon absolutely eviscerated him in the media, and it does seem like it's make or break time yet again for Lee Griffiths. But I get the feeling that this time it may be, you know, crucial for his Celtic career, and Neil Lennon's really throwing the gauntlet down. A lot of people may be saying that he's gone over the top, and with Griffiths' well-documented mental health problems, that Lennon should have done this privately rather than in the public. I would personally trust Neil Lennon to know his player. I think Neil Lennon's very good with knowing what makes players tick and what motivates them. And Griffiths has always been a player from, you know, day dot in his career that gets motivated by being criticised and proving people wrong. You see what he's like with Chris Boyd and, you know, various other people have told him he's finished and all that. So I trust Neil Lennon to get this right, but from the outside looking in, it doesn't look too pretty.
No, of course it doesn't. And, you know, you'd want, you know, first of all, I feel like Griffiths probably did let himself down in a sense over the summer, and Lennon wouldn't have said those things if there wasn't huge truth to them. As I said, Lennon's been pretty candid about all sorts of subjects this summer, and like yourself, I trust Lennon's judgment on it. But at the same time, you know, there's been a bit of a thing where people are saying Griffiths' career's over, he's going to be sent away and all this, and that could well be true by the end of the transfer window. But I think it's notable that Lennon hasn't come completely closed the door on Griffiths again, and said he's not considering a loan move or anything at the moment, and that Griffiths had been working away and he was going to be assessed at Lennox Town over the last few days when they returned from France. But you consider the striking situation, and Bayo's injured. Did you know that? Vakun's Bayo's injured again.
Yeah, well, he's I worked it out from the fact they've not seen him anywhere in France.
So Lennon said he was injured again. So we need Griffiths, pretty much, until we sign someone else who's of the calibre that can compete with Odson Edouard. And there's still doubts about Klamala, even though there's been signs of positive progress there, and he's put on 3.5 kilograms of weight and all this. But we need Griffiths to, because Griffiths is a great player on his day when he's motivated and he's fit and he's got something to prove. He's a goal scorer, and he will, you know, eat most Scottish Premiership teams alive. And we know he can do the job for us, so I'm hoping that he gets back to some sort of fitness by the time the season's in full swing and the qualifiers roll around, because the most exciting team at the start of 2020 was a team that included Lee Griffiths and Odson Edouard.
I think that's why it's most frustrating, and probably why Neil Lennon's most frustrated, that when we signed off prior to coronavirus, Lee Griffiths was netting a hat-trick against St Mirren in, you know, the last competitive match that we played, and everything seemed to be going in the right direction with him, and he seems to have let himself down badly again. And I think the fact that Neil Lennon was so public just shows in many ways how much he wants Lee Griffiths to succeed, because we know in the past that if players aren't doing the right thing, Lennon will just bomb them, but he won't even mention them in the press. Yeah. The likes of Marion Schved spring out. you know, he's continually takes his time in new signings to bed them in, Neil Lennon. But with Griffiths, he went public, and I think that tells you he knows how big a player Griffiths can be, how important he can be. And I just really, really hope that Griffiths is now doing everything right. Interesting that he touched on the social media point of things. Lennon himself was obviously on social media not so long ago in his first term at the club, realised that wasn't working too well for him, and that's probably where he's coming from now. I agree. I think it doesn't come across well on Griffiths if he's coming back not in ideal shape. Meanwhile, he's posting, you know, TikToks of himself making stir fries and stuff at home. I don't know if it's
pictured with kebab shops and all this stuff.
I don't know if it's what we should be going for. We're going for 10 in a row. But I mean, has there been any strikers mentioned? I know the guy Sean Weissman from Wolfsberger in Austria. He seemed to have the ideal pedigree with the amount of goals he scored, but something didn't seem quite right about that for me. Just the fact that
seems a bit too ambitious.
His goal scoring record seems so immense, and I can't see his A, being able to afford him, or B, fighting off interest from major leagues. But has been anyone else that's been
mentioned? We've been linked with a West Ham striker, Albion Ajeti. He signed for West Ham last year. It seemed to be a kind of El Yunusi situation. I'm pretty sure he played for Basel as well. Before he moved to the Premier League, he only made something like 9 appearances for West Ham last season. That's been the main one we've been linked with. And the chat is that it would be perhaps a loan deal, or even one of these, perhaps a loan to buy deal with him. So that's the only real name that stood out for me. There's been a lot of chat about Lyle Taylor and Ivan Toney, but I don't see any of those a goer. I think Lyle Taylor is a free agent and will pick up a massive wage somewhere because of the way English football is. And I think Ivan Toney's perhaps set for bigger things in the Scottish Premier League.
I think that one's been pretty much ruled out by Peterborough director of football. Name escapes me. But
Barry Fry, is it?
Barry Fry. He effectively said that the club had accepted a bid earlier on in the week and it wasn't from Celtic. Right. But interestingly enough, he informed Celtic because Celtic had been asked to, or had asked to be kept updated about Toney. So there clearly was some sort of interest there. But again, that's another one. He was top scorer by about 10 goals in League One last season. He scored, I think, 25-odd goals in 30 matches. Mm-hmm. And I just don't see how we're ever going to be able to afford a player of that level. See, you're just a little bit concerned that maybe, as much as we want to set the bar high and bring in quality players, that they're unrealistic signings. Because I don't personally see us spending 9, 10 million on a striker this summer, especially if we're going to spend money on a goalkeeper. And I just hope that we get someone. And I wouldn't be surprised to see it being a loan signing, just to give us a little bit of security. Maybe this guy at West Ham looks interesting. Mm-hmm. You compare them to El Yunusi in terms of his standing in the game and the way he hadn't quite made it an English Premier League club. On El Yunusi himself, he's the only signing we've made so far this summer. Are we glad to get him back again?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I was a big fan of him. He had his injury problems last season, but I think he showed in a few games that he really has the quality to make an impact for us. I think, was it the semi-final against Hibs in the League Cup that he was particularly impressive? So if he could produce that kind of performance on a consistent basis, he'll be one of our best players. And you saw when we were in France, that goal he scored against Lyon was outstanding. So that's the kind of impact we need in the final third. And there seems to be some sort of blossoming understanding between Taylor, El Yunusi and McGregor on that kind of left side. And I think that could prove fruitful. You know, El Yunusi is a player who likes to cut in a lot and kind of really drive at the defence. And I think that's what we need on that side. And hopefully he can stay fit and injury free, because He looks, he's a player. You know, it's quite obvious he's a player and he's got the skill. He just needs to put it together and have, like, and that's a positive for me that we've kind of retained him, because it's difficult on a 1 year loan to really get yourself into the club, hit the ground running, impress yourself, and, you know, have a storming season. But if you've been around the place for a year already, you know, it's effectively like he signed for us, and that he's our player. I know he's only a loan player, we're not going to make a profit off him, etc. But it's like we've had him in the club, he knows what everyone's about. He's had his first season of injury problems. If he can stay fit, then he, you know, the Scottish Premiership, he should eat that up next season for me, if he can be motivated to do that. And he seems motivated, so I'm happy with that.
Yeah, only scored 4 league goals last season, which I found a little bit interesting. I thought it would have been more than that. I know he had his injury problems, and he also scored that double against Hibs in the Cup and in one of the European games, I think it was Cluj as well. So yes, hopefully he can make a real impact in that left-hand side, especially with Mikey Johnson out at the moment. Just briefly, just to finish this little segment, a couple of players that have left. Johnny Hayes, Jozo Simunovic, this was a good few weeks ago now. You can take Hayes if you want, and just final grand old podcast comment on Johnny.
Yeah, interesting. I thought, yeah, I was quite slightly confused that we let him go. not because I'm I think he's a great player or anything. It just, I don't know. It seemed to be a kind of clearing the deck situation for bringing players in, but you know, the time's ticked on and we've not brought anyone in apart from El Yunusi. So we've been left a little short, I think, on the flank. And I think having Hayes around as a utility man would have been pretty good, but clearly the club have some sort of plan in place for replacing him, hopefully. You know, I do think we need sign-ins in the wing area. I think we need another winger, another quality winger, so hopefully we see that. Hayes is a good servant for the club. You know, Lennon was a big fan of him, and I think he did about as well as anyone would have expected of him. I don't think anyone expected him to set the world on fire when he signed from Aberdeen. He played a squad role. He's a popular member of the dressing room, popular with fans, scored at Ibrox, won trophies. You know, you live the dream. So he's away back to Aberdeen, and good luck to him. It's quite interesting, though, because they've been booing him for 2 years, so I wonder, he's had to forgo his wages for a year to get back in their good books.
It's crazy they would boo anyone, wouldn't they? Because you remember when he signed with us, I'm sure he did some sort of deal where any Aberdeen fan who had got Hayes on the back of his new season shirt, he then paid for them to replace it or something, and they still booed him.
That Aberdeen lot, they're a very bitter bunch.
Indeed, but they're playing Rangers at the first game of the season, so hopefully Johnny Hayes and Niall McGinn, etc., can do the bit of a favour for us there. I'll take Simunovic just briefly. I feel like this is a bit of a strange one that's not really been covered much in it. I was kind of thinking last night when I was doing research for the show, and I realised that Simunovic had moved on, and I kind of thought, God, I've not actually... You know that way you register it, but you don't actually think, oh, there's Simunovic away. And I think it's mainly because most of the media talk has been about the fact that Hayes has gone to Aberdeen, obviously the fact that it's another Scottish team, and mainly because of the amount of coverage that Aberdeen get, especially with the BBC in this country. But yeah, Simunovic, it's kind of strange that that's him just away. He was obviously, his career was effectively consigned to history after that terrible mistake in the Copenhagen game, and I think that was the final straw for many Celtic supporters. But he gave us some good moments. The 67th minute goal for Billy McNeil, where we're in the number 5. Of course, in a more comical fashion, the challenge on Kenny Miller. Those are two iconic Celtic moments from... In all honesty, if you were comprising a top 10 or top 20 Celtic moments of the last decade, those two would be in there somewhere. So,
again,
thanks very much.
Again, it's one of those ones where, yeah, you understand them getting let go if Celtic have a plan. If Celtic have a plan for the position and they're thinking of bringing in a defender, but... You know, again, it's been nearly a month now and there's no sign of a defender coming in, and that's something, another area of the team that badly needs strengthened. So if we're going to sign no one, I would have rather kept him around. We had an option of extending his contract for a year, I think. So it wasn't, it's just an odd one, not another odd one, but, you know, hopefully the recruitment team have something in place.
Hopefully. Right, Sunday 2nd of August, Celtic return to competitive action. Hamilton Accies visit Celtic Park, 4:30 p.m. kickoff. That is a Sunday, I don't know if I said that or not. Comfortable win for you?
Well, I would hope so, yeah.
If it's not.
Yeah, we're in big trouble if it's not. I think the opening weekend's going to be fun. I think it might throw up a few surprises. I think the fact that Rangers are off to Aberdeen kind of sets us up, but you know, they're looking in decent shape, so I would expect them to probably beat Aberdeen at Pittodrie. So we need to win these matches. We need to win from the off. We can't have a slow start to the season this year. It's too important. There's too much hype. If we get back off to a bad start, it just puts us under undue pressure that we don't need to put ourselves under, and it would be very avoidable. So I would expect a very comfortable victory with no drama, a couple of goals or a few goals, and just move on to the next thing. Still feel like Celtic are warming up a little bit, and I think that next month's a massive month, so we need to make sure that we kind of get off to a good start, because can't go into these qualifiers cold either, because they're going to be tough in themselves, especially if we get an away draw, because there's no home and away games, and if we have to travel off to some place and play an away match and a one-off encounter, you know, are you really going to, you know, would you put money on us progressing? So we need to be very good next month, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Right, so as I say, 4:30 p.m. kickoff on Sunday, penultimate game of the opening weekend. I think we'll win pretty comfortably. I think it might be a 4 or 5 niler. I just get that impression that the team will want to start really strong. That game's live in Sky Sports, as is every other Premiership game this season. Celtic fans who can't get to the match, you'll also be able to view the game on your pass to paradise. Interesting to see how all that works out at the start of the season, and I believe they're trialling it in the two upcoming friendlies that we've got between now and next Sunday. Ross County visit Celtic Park on Sunday the 26th of July. That game may have passed depending when you listen to it, and Hibs the following day. It's a 1 p.m. kickoff for the County game and 1:30 for Hibs, both at Celtic Park, as I say. So yes, we await all the complaints frying into Celtic TV in the aftermath or during those games, but hopefully it all gets sorted out in time for the Hamilton game, and I'm predicting a comfortable win in that one.
I'll go 2-0 for that one, I think.
Oh, if we're doing numbers, I'll go, what did I say? I'll go 5-0. How about that? We'll start 5-0. Just before we go, big question to you, John. Are we going to win the league?
Yes, yeah. We've still got the best team in Scotland. I'm a bit worried about the depth available, and I think that we need to get on with sign-ins. I'm not sure if the fact the transfer window open until October is going to be a help or a hindrance, but at the moment it's been a bit of a hindrance because we've just not done anything, but I think we've got the team in place, and I hope that we have the squad in place eventually. You know, there's chat that we'll be able to use 5 substitutes and everything. For the Scottish Premiership clubs are a way to vote on that. So if that passes, I think that benefits Celtic more than any other team, because I think we've got better players, and I think that, you know, what's going to do us in this season is the schedule and the fixtures, if anything's going to do us in, because it just seems absolutely brutal from the August 2nd until next May. It's going to be a real fight. It's going to be a dog fight. I think Rangers might be a little bit closer than they were last season. They've got it all to prove themselves that they can maintain it past January. And if they can this season, then we're going to be in it. And we need to be prepared for that. But I think Celtic's quality and experience and winning mentality will win out again. And we'll be 10 in a row winners.
Bring it on. What a way to finish the podcast. Thanks very much, John, for joining me. Thank you for you taking the time to listen to this podcast. If you've got any thoughts on the show, any questions for future episodes, get in touch with us. We're on Twitter. I think it's at Grand Old Pod or something along those lines. You'll find us anyway. We're Facebook as well, etc., etc. We'll hopefully reconvene after the Hamilton game, although it is a little bit of a awkward kickoff time, so it may be a little bit later on in that week. But yeah, hopefully that's Grand Old Podcast back for the new season, as Celtic are as well. Take care, enjoy the first game of the season, and until next time, hail, hail.